Welcome to the 12th Man Podcast, opinionated debate on everything Borough. Let's have it.
Tell the box, Janino nearly there. Bavandelli, go! Mark Schwartz is in. Get in! Get in, you big hussy!
Bidwell, Boston hasn't finished yet. Kick it!
Right, big one this one, innit? Are we ready?
Always.
Right, this is a big one, so yes. Thank you for listening. Good evening, welcome to the 12th Man Podcast. Got a really busy one tonight. Me, Steve Jackson, I'm in the main chair. I'll be running through everything this evening. It's John Cutler's with me. Evening, Cut.
Evening, lads.
Do I say any quicker?
Well, we've got a lot to get through. You've just said it. Oh, yeah, let's go.
Rare occasion, got Mr. Jamie Dalgana with us.
No, boys, all right.
All right. Online, we've got Mr. Steve Dixon with us. Evening, Dicko.
Evening, lads. Okay.
We're good. And good. In about 15 minutes, we're going to have MFC Head of Football Operation, Kieran Scott's going to pop on. So, yes, lots to talk about, lots to get through. Let's get going.
If you've got any questions, please send them through. We'll try and get through as many as we can.
Yes, people watching live, please get them through. Obviously, if you're listening at 3 o'clock in the morning, don't send it because I'm not going to read it. So yes, get them in, get them onto us, and we'll get as many fired across to him as we can. All right, right. I'm even going to ask you how you are because I don't care. Right, 11 o'clock came. Cuts. Team came out. Was that the team you expected yesterday?
Yeah, I thought Colbert might start, to be honest, but obviously they're trying to nurse him through whatever injuries he's got, and sadly I think it proved a lot of people right that we're desperate for a striker. I know Steve has mentioned it for weeks now, and I've pretty much agreed with him all the way through. And once we let Cav go as well, I was surprised we didn't have a striker to bring in. I know he hasn't had many minutes, but he's a striker and we haven't got one.
Well, I mean, I'll go on to a striker in a bit because I thought our striker scored a cracking goal yesterday. So, Dally, what do you think of the team?
Yeah, pretty much what I'd expected, to be fair, given the squad that we've got. Obviously, you've touched on it there, Cuts, with the lack of striker options. I thought Laelaf would have been perfect fit for yesterday if he'd been fit, but obviously wasn't to be. And I think he's relying on goals coming from all parts of the team. But when you've got a finisher like we have, in Marcus Force, then you know, right place, right time.
Exactly, it was right place at right time. I know we got the goal in a minute, but Dicko, what did you think of the team?
I was a little bit underwhelmed, to be honest, when I seen the lineup.
Good positive start. Go on.
I was a bit like Cuts. I expected to see Josh Coburn start the game and be a focal point up front, but after seeing Josh Coburn come on in the game, it was pretty evident that he's way off physically, by the looks of it. So that's why Greenwood got the nod, and I thought Greenwood done okay, to be fair. I'm not a fan of having Hayden Hackney getting moved around with the Barlasa and House in the midfield, the three of those. I much prefer to see Middlesbrough and Michael Carrick's usual formation, his favourite formation, of the 4-2-3-1. Rather than the 4-3-3, I prefer to see Hayden Hackney in his usual role alongside Johnny Howson. So, yeah, I was a little bit underwhelmed, but the options are limited at the moment, so probably the best we could do.
Well, that's it. Options are still a bit limited, you know. So, yeah, it is what it is. You know, that's the team we've got. I mean, first half, I thought we started really slow first half. I thought we were really slow. We didn't look like we got into it. But I want to get into the second half because that's where it really started.
I'm the same as you. On my notes, the first thing I've got is didn't start first half. They missed the City. We were lucky not to be 1-0 down at half time.
Does that show how good Vandenberg's awareness is? Because he positioned himself. I know it's obviously people are going to go, well, he should be on the line anyway. But he put himself in that position before that ball hit Barr. I think Barr was with the shot. Yeah,
maybe
he was there. He was there before you knew it, and clearing straight away. He's an absolute Rolls Royce, that boy, isn't he?
Oh, he's top notch. I'm sure Kieran will come on and he'll take all the credit for that one. He's been absolutely flying, hasn't he?
Yeah. Like you mentioned there, we could have been one down, we could have been two down, and I'll give him praise where I'll give him, you know, where I can criticise as well. But on that one, Glover's save in the first half with his right hand, you know, from the tight angle.
Oh yeah, yeah, the noise it is when his arm as well, didn't that ping him?
He had a strong hand.
Great save.
It was a great save. We could have been two down.
Mm-hmm.
We could have scored as well with his ass. You know,
exactly.
He has time to take another touch, hit the target, you score.
Absolutely.
But unfortunately, it goes over.
That's the only thing, isn't it? You know, it's them fine margins. That's what playoff races are about. You know, then you get into the second half. It's a bit cagey. Fully admit, it wasn't the greatest second half to watch. If you're watching it as a neutral, you think, oh God, this is a bit boring, this. Mm. But then, we got that free kick. You'll back me on this, won't you, Dally? Because we were in the middle of saying, that is the worst free kick routine I've ever seen. And then Marcus Forss pulls the touch of a god out of nowhere and pings it.
That was a great goal.
Oh, unbelievable goal.
It's a great goal. Obviously, something that they've worked on the training ground. Shows, you know, that they're working on things there, and it looked great. They looked terrible when they fail, but that was beautiful.
Well, we already thought it did look terrible. So well,
Dally mentioned before we came on air, it possibly one of the goals of the season, that, because it really was. Everything worked really well for it. It was a fantastic touch, a fantastic finish, and it gives all the people who keep saying that Forss should be playing up front a little more ammunition, doesn't it?
Well, I think if you look at how many games he's played, how many games he's been out. Is he joint top scorer?
Top goal scorer. If he's not, he'll be one off. He's not far off.
Yeah. Honestly, he's a centre forward of where we are right now. I can't believe people don't think he's our best option. He's got to be our best option.
I said it weeks ago, mate. You know, do what Karanka didn't do with Stuani. Put him up top. He's a scorer. He's a goal scorer. You know, I know he scores his goals predominantly from coming in from the right. I totally get that, but not yesterday.
That's
he was
great.
Banging in front of the goal, wasn't he? He was unbelievable. Yeah. Diggle, what do you think of the goal? Great greenish, wasn't it?
Yeah, great technique. Touch with his left foot, superb. Spun on it, swiveled on it, lashed it in with his right foot. Unstoppable goal. On the Marcus Forss debate, I like him on the right hand side. I've got to say, I think if it's not broken, don't try and fix it. He's getting goals regularly on the right hand side, causing teams trouble on the right hand side. He works hard, he gets up and down. I do like him on the right hand side, but I understand the debates to put him up front because we're lacking strikers. And when Isaiah Jones comes back fully fit and flying, I wouldn't be upset to see Marcus Forss tried through the middle.
No problem. I mean, Sharon Howells has come on, even Shaz. I know Shaz. Everybody knows Shaz. not in that way. Why didn't McGree get on the bench? To be fair, he came on after 70 minutes, didn't he, for Australia on Friday? 50 minutes on the pitch.
I can't understand it. If Silvera's on the bench, he's travelling the same way back.
Yeah, but Silvera didn't play, did he? McGree did.
What, so he would have been all right for 20 minutes, surely. I was amazed Riley wasn't on the bench. Once Silvera was on, I was amazed Riley wasn't.
Well, I had a little look into that, because one of our best guests, Aussie Rye, talks to him quite frequently, doesn't he? And he put something on Twitter saying he did ask the question, you know, did he want to play? He put his hand up, but he was told no. Whether that's 100% true, I don't know. Go on his Twitter, have a read. He put himself in, but he says he's back now. He looks like he's raring to go as well.
I didn't see any of the cup competition that him and Silvera flew away to. Is it part of his rehabilitation that, you know, he hasn't played 90 minutes yet, and playing two games in that space of time, was it worth the risk putting him in?
Maybe. I say that's something we'll never know, I suppose.
He's such a good big player for this squad, so I understand if that's why they did it. Maybe a long flight maybe makes you more susceptible to injury. I don't know.
The only way we'll judge it is Saturday. If he has a good week, training.
I'll be amazed if he's not starting Saturday. Absolutely amazed.
Carrick said he's fully fit. He said after the game, he's fully fit, he's flying.
Yep.
We're going to get the real Riley McGree back now, the real version of Riley McGree back now. He's fully fit. Good. He's played his minutes for Australia. And I'll be amazed, like John Cutler's just said there, if he's not the first name on the team sheet against Bristol City.
We've missed him, haven't we?
Yeah. Right.
Massively.
Let's quickly go into their goal.
Let's not.
I mean, we've got to, but loads of people will read it and watch it and go, what's the keeper doing? Rightfully so, but all I say is have a look for the 20 seconds before, because the defending is absolutely, for a team that's 1-0 up with, how many minutes was it, 7 minutes to go? That's schoolboyish. Yeah. It's very, very bad.
We've talked in the past here about game management. Yeah. So you can take it right the way back to when the ball's in our box.
Yeah.
And for some reason, Aylin runs 30 yards to close the left back down or whatever it is and leaves an ocean of space behind. And I really like Aylin, but with 7 minutes to go, it's come on, you've got to sit a little bit deeper. You can't be doing that. He left oceans in behind him, and then the two centre-halves were 10 yards behind. I don't know where the left back was. We can go on forever about it.
I think you could take it before that. If you look at the cross that Engel puts into the box, you look at the two players, he's put it behind them. He's put it behind the two targets, and their fullback picks it up, plays the one, obviously drags Aylin out, play the 1-2, and then they've got oceans of space. Yeah. But like you say, that the back, the defender, they get sucked into, was it Bellingham, and leave the space for the lad on the right hand side.
No, it's just so poor. It's so bad. I was just appalled by it. I really was. It annoyed me obviously when it went in, but it annoyed me even more when someone sent me a picture of it. Thanks, Jason. It was just a bad goal, wasn't it, Dicko? It was just such a poor goal to concede.
Yeah, it was. It was poor defending. We had enough bodies back to have put up a better defensive line. Too many players, too much space, too much time for Roussan to take his time, pick his spot.
Yeah.
When it was a pot shot, really.
Exactly.
And I have to say, I feel sorry for Glover, because I thought he'd had a really good game.
He did.
He took some really decent crosses, caught everything, looked commanding, and made a couple of decent saves in the game. His kicking was excellent as well. His distribution, he had a really good game. And if he's almost opened the back door for Seni Dieng with that mistake to come back in the team. Mm-hmm. Because if we win 1-0 on Saturday, I think Carrick's got a tough decision to make. So I can understand why he was distraught after the game. I mean, it wasn't the howler of all howlers. It was a difficult shot to save because it dipped right in front of him. But his positioning was slightly out. He should have been half a yard further to his left, and he'll be disappointed with it. I mean, it's not a... You seen Alisson yesterday, who's supposed to be the best goalkeeper in the world, make a couple of howlers. They weren't... His
that
howler
was
wasn't...
That was great to see. That, wasn't it? Superb.
Glover's wasn't the howler of that level. But as a goalkeeper, he'll save that shot 10 times out of 10 in training. And unfortunately, on the big occasion, it wasn't to be. But I don't think we should be bashing him for it, because he's done well as an understudy coming in for Dieng. He's been very good, I think, and he had a good game on Saturday, apart from that one lapse.
Who did we play on Saturday?
Sunday.
I was going to say, I wasn't there Saturday. But no, I see your point. The thing is now, it was probably the worst time to make the mistake, because Dieng's back in training now, isn't he?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think that's why he's distraught as well, because he'll know that as well. He'll know that.
And with Steve, I wouldn't go all in bashing him for it. He's made one mistake. He's been far better than what I thought he was. So fair play to the scouting team, and we'll mention that to Kieran when he comes on. I think Glover's been really good, and like Dicko says, I will class it as a mistake. If he hadn't made that mistake on Sunday, I would have kept him in the team.
Yeah, absolutely. It's it's something for Carrick to think about when he obviously selects the team for Saturday against Bristol City. So it's a big decision for him to make. Obviously, I can't knock what Glover's been doing, because I think he's been brilliant.
Yes.
But it was horrible. It was a horrible goal all round. I think Carrick will probably hold his hand up as well, and say there's probably little things I could have helped done to, try and help with that as well. I'm not saying it's all his fault or anything like that. I just think some of the decisions that I thought bringing three subs on in the positions he did at the same time, we didn't need them all at the same time. We could have broke that up. That's just me being picky, but.
The subs didn't work. Spot on, Jacko. The three subs, I think it was 77 minutes, 5 minutes before Sunderland equalised, and it seemed to make Middlesbrough disjointed. Mm. The three that come on just didn't seem up to speed, didn't seem to get the grips with the game. Silveira, O'Brien, Coburn didn't really have an impact in the game. And in all honesty, if anybody was going to probably win the game, it would have been Sunderland, because they seemed to come on really strong after they scored and had a couple of half chances. And you're thinking we could actually lose this game now from being so comfortable all second half and so much better than Sunderland. We could actually lose this game in the dying seconds. So, not to be, but just remember we didn't lose the game. It's still a point on the board.
Exactly, it's another point on the board.
Let's go next. Yeah.
We'll move on from it. It's fine. You know, we think we've got, if you want to take some perspective, we've got 4 points off them. We've scored 5 goals. I'll take that. I'll take that off your local rivals. No point, no problem at all. So I'll quickly ask you your man of the matches, and I'm going to let the main man in. So I'm going to go first, because I never go first, so I'm going first. I'm going Marcus Force. I thought Force was brilliant yesterday. I know he obviously went off after 70 odd minutes, but you pick that goal out, you put that in the Premier League, and you'll watch Gary Neville do his noise over that. That's all I'm saying. Unbelievable finish, great striker's goal.
Well, get ready for a surprise.
You know,
I think Dan Barlasa played well yesterday. I was quite surprised when he got took off, to be honest. So I'm going to go for Barlasa.
Okay. Dali?
Yeah, I'll go Van der Berg.
Yeah.
Goal line clearance. I thought he was, apart from the goal where he got dragged out following the man, I thought he was fantastic.
Learning curve, that's all that is. Yeah. Dickle, come with you. Come with you.
I agree with Dali, Rav Van der Berg. Okay. Yeah, he's possibly his best game in a Borough shirt. Very good.
And quickly before I let Kieran in, no one won our predictor, our competition. No one got it right. I've checked them all. No one got it right, so we'll try again Saturday, so send all your predictions in either Facebook or X or Twitter, whatever Elon Musk is calling it these days, or YouTube. You know, send them all in and we'll have another go on Saturday. So we'll put our predictions out.
What is it the winner?
A lovely A4 print of a sketch done by Graham Bandera, kindly donated, of the display from the Chelsea game, of all the scarves in the North Stand and the display from the South Stand. It's a brilliant picture. I've got it. I love it.
He's named it online today as well. He's named it as Pride and Passion. That's what it's called.
There you go. Pride and Passion. And it was absolutely spot on. That's all I could describe for that night. So, right, without further ado, I'm going to let him in. I'll let our guest in. He's kind of given us his time. He's kind of given us, you know, on a busy Monday evening that he's got. He should be popping up any second.
I bet it's not busy as last Monday.
No, I reckon last Monday was probably busier. But Kieran, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you, no problem. I don't seem to have any video. I don't know if you can see me.
I can't see you, but we can hear you. That's all I need. Perfect. Thank you so much for popping on and giving us your time. I really do appreciate it. First things first, I mean, obviously we know you. Obviously we've had the pleasure to sit down with you and chat with you previously, but for the fans that are getting in touch and listening and watching, just give us a bit of an insight. You know, who is Kieran Scott?
That's a complicated question. Now, listen, I mean, obviously I'm first and foremost a football fan who's lucky enough to work in the industry and you know, really enjoy working in the football industry. I'm someone who's come up probably from the bottom in terms of as a, you know, like a volunteer scout, part-time scout, full-time scout, you know, head of recruitment, and obviously into head of football here. So I'm someone who's worked my way into the industry and, you know, really enjoy it and feel lucky to be in it.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously we're lucky to have you. You know, you've been with us, it's been a couple of years now, hasn't it? You've been with us. Obviously, you've done a fantastic job, both ins and outs. How did you find the January transfer window, firstly? I know it was quite a busy period getting towards the end. Obviously, a lot of work was getting done. You know, obviously, Rodgers left us. I imagine it was probably the busiest month you have, obviously, apart from the summer.
Yeah, I mean, January's it's a busy window because I mean, I've just been trying to get my video to work, so I apologise. For some reason it won't put my video on, so maybe that's a good thing. People don't have to see the state of me after a January window. My eyes are big and baggy, so it's probably done everyone a favour. January's a really busy month. The summer is a little bit different because you get a bit of time to plan, and it's obviously a longer window, so you get a little bit more you know, conversations and meetings, etc. January's, it can be a little bit reactive because of what's gone on up until that point. You know, things that go on, you know, we had a little bit of an injury issue at times. We were getting a few injuries, so then you start to plot and plan in January. So it can be quiet. You've got to be quiet. What's the word I'd use? Not on the spot. You know, you try and plan and prep as best you can, but things do just come on top, and you've got to make sure that you're ready to go. So lists are forever evolving and moving, and then other players move, etc. So January's a tough window. I think a lot of people always say that do my job and chief execs, etc. It's a difficult window.
Yeah, I can imagine, absolutely. I mean, Al, Dicko, I know you wanted to obviously pose the first real question that we had for the main man. I'll hand over to you for this one.
Evening, Kieran. Thanks for coming on. This is obviously a podcast, the voice of the fans, and I'm just going to dive straight in with what's been on most fans' lips for the last couple of weeks, months. In the summer, we're obviously trying to get a striker in and couldn't do it for whatever reason. And Josh Coburn was going to go off to Plymouth on loan. We decided to keep Josh. And we're pushing towards the January window. Obviously, high on the agenda had to be a goal scorer, had to be a striker. I listened to you on BBC Tees in November, where you said that, you know, we're going to try and go one better than last January, even though that would be difficult to do, and that Middlesbrough were good to go then, and that was in November. We're good to go for January. So January's came. Obviously, we've allowed Morgan Rodgers to go, which is a great bit of business, but for decent money, 15 million. We've allowed young Callum Kavanagh to leave the club on a permanent transfer, which was a bit of a shock to most supporters. We've got obviously a scouting network that you've got around Europe, around South America. You've got contacts in the Premier League. Michael Carrick is a pull to a lot of young players in this country. How did we get to a stage that when that window was shut, that we didn't get a striker through the door? Now, 2 points. How didn't we get a striker through the door? And secondly, how close did we get to actually getting a striker through the door?
Nice, easy one to start, eh, Kieran?
Yeah, no, listen, no problem. It's a question that I've been asked a lot, really. It wasn't through a want to try. The one thing that we, you know, refuse to do is get caught up in just throwing money down the drain. We didn't feel that there was a player that came up that was achievable for us in the window. Financially, as always, you know, the owner and Steve does his best to support us, so I'm not going to say it's a financial issue. We tried our best with every player that we could see, but you know, there was a few issues with people suiting our style of play. Again, you know, I still personally think that, you know, we have four strikers at the club. It's not just Josh and Emmanuel. We have Marcus and we have Sam Greenwood, so I don't think we're quite as bare as people think. To find players better than that, you know, you do have to spend a hell of a lot of money. You have to, certainly in the January window, you have to, you know, invest in an element of risk. It's a player that's not maybe played a lot of football. Are they going to turn up and they need 6 games to get going, etc.? So it just wasn't an opportunity to sign a player that was frankly good enough in our view to come in and make that difference at the time. Now, what we could have done was appeased everybody and thrown X amount of money into one that makes everybody feel better because he's come, but we didn't feel that it was the right risk to take. There just wasn't that player that came up, and you know, I know that hasn't, you know, suited everybody, but from a club's perspective, we just didn't want to throw a load of money down the drain, to be honest.
So briefly, Kieran, going into that, how does the scouting network work? Abroad, do we, I've used the wrong word here, but I say randomly send scouts out to, say, South America to take games in? Or is it players that are watched on television first, then we send scouts out? How does that work in, say, South America, for example?
Well, no, I mean, on a wider scale, I mean, from a scouting perspective, we scour a lot of leagues. Now, we've only got a certain amount of people. We haven't got, you know, 30, 40 scouts at full time that can blitz the, you know, the world of football like, you know, some Premier League clubs have. So what we tend to do is we do a lot of video work within our base, which gives us and points us in the right direction. And we obviously have a data team that help us, guide us into leagues that where we don't have somebody. We pull those specific players out and then we share them with the scouts, and then we try and hone in on the individuals that we like, and then we will then plan a trip around that individual or a group of individuals, as opposed to just, you know, landing in Rio de Janeiro and just going to pick a load of games up and hoping for the best. We try and be quite strategic in how that works. But like I say, we haven't got a team of 30, 40, so, you know, we have to be quite strategic with how we go about it.
So basically what he's saying is you send Leo over and he'll just tell you which one's good and which one's bad. Does that sound about right?
Listen, Leo certainly has his big uses in South America. I mean, as he's respected here, he's massively respected down there as well. And listen, he's helped us on a few scouting trips, and obviously the language and everything like that. Leo's a big use in that. But yeah, you know, Leo's very, very good down there in the South America.
No, absolutely. I mean, one player that's obviously being mentioned, obviously the sale of Morgan Rodgers happens. I suppose it was a bit out of the blue for a lot of fans, including myself. I was a bit shocked when the interest came in. How obviously it happened pretty quickly in terms of, you know, some transfers that's happened. You know, what was the initial, you know, reaction to yourselves, obviously, when Aston Villa came in and asked the question? And were you as shocked as the fans were? You know, how did that process go?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and lie and say I was expecting it. And that's no disrespect to Morgan. He's only just joined us. You know, they had an opportunity to take him from Manchester City as we did, if that was somebody that had been on their radar for a long period. So, yeah, I mean, shocked. But, you know, with all, you know, due respect to Morgan, he'd started to show a few signs of what he could be. You know, would I say it was a fraction earlier than I anticipated? Absolutely. I think it probably coincides with the fact that we played Aston Villa in the FA Cup. The manager would have done his prep work on us when he watched us. You know, he may watch 5-6 games. I don't know their process, but he would have watched us in detail. Maybe Morgan's caught his eye there, and then obviously in the game, Morgan's maybe done a few things that he feels that they needed. And they've obviously acted on that. Mm. That's the only way I can see it. I couldn't say he's been watching them for 18 months because I just don't think that's quite what's happened in that situation.
So was the first approach made after the FA Cup game, Kieran?
Yes.
Yeah.
It was, yeah. I think the other clue for me, from my side, that you know, they were acting on that was the fact that we'd signed Finn Azaz early in the window. If there was an interest in Morgan, maybe at that point, I think they would have obviously used Finn Azaz as a bit of a bargaining tool, which they didn't. They were good, they were fine, it was a clean negotiation, and it was only regarding Finn there was no mention of Morgan at that point. So it must have been in that period that they've acted the way they have.
So with it being obviously with Aston Villa coming in for Morgan and then putting the first bid in, was it a point of the club having a set fee that we would accept, or was it let's hold on and see how much we can get, see if there's any other interest from any other clubs? Was it, or was it purely because there was a number of bids that were turned down? Was it purely you need to meet this figure for us to even think about it?
Yeah, to be honest, it was. It sort of caught us all on surprise, really, how aggressive that they actually were on the bidding process. You know, they made an offer, we saw it, and as a club decided it wasn't for us. We rejected that, and we felt that would probably be the end of it. They came back quite quickly, and they came back, you know, a few times. So in the end, we got to a stage where it was like the boy's head had, you know, arguably been turned a little bit, although he acted, I must say, brilliantly, professionally and very maturely for a 21-year-old lad. I can't fault him, but there was clearly, you know, stuff going on, and we'd got to a point where, you know, to protect the club and not end up with a situation that I think some clubs do end up in, where they, you know, dig their heels and maybe ego takes over and then they end up losing on both scenarios. We made a sort of decision internally that there would be a price, a fee that would allow us to have a more sensible conversation. And in the end, Villa got themselves there, hence the prolonged nature of it and the fact that there was quite a few rejected offers.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was a bit of a shock to us, obviously, when it happened. Obviously, with the money coming in for Morgan, obviously, we've only seen what's, you know, reported. We don't know what, you know, the figure is, etc. Did an interesting question from me? Did that make it a bit more difficult to bring a replacement or a striker in? You know, simply because clubs will have seen the same reports we have and thought, well, they've got a bit more extra money disposable, and they put a bit more of a price tag on potential players that we were looking at.
Yeah, I mean, it never helps. I must say, when stuff like that goes on and people get wind of numbers and see, you know, the number at the end, it doesn't make things any easier. There was certainly, you know, people we did inquire and people we did try and work with. It was, you know, not not the most sensible of answers coming back from these clubs. So no, it never helps when it's out there. But listen, that's something you can't really stop.
No, absolutely not.
I was just going to say, I've got a question from the Holgate Ender on X, and he's asking, with the new template at the club, what's the real timeline for the club to get promoted? Or are we just now a top half championship team? And I've had a few points on this sort of same side of the question, almost supporters questioning the ambition of the club now with selling we're better players like Chuba Akpom and now Morgan Rogers, but we haven't really replaced them. What would you say to supporters? What's the actual ambition of the club moving forward if we don't make the playoffs this season? Is next season looking promising? Well, you know, are the funds there to have a real good push at it next season, since we didn't spend the Morgan Rogers money? You're going to be the man that's going to be dealing with that side of things. What would you say to supporters who are questioning the sort of the ambition of the club?
Listen, I get that question, and to be fair, I understand why that's asked, and I can see, you know, sometimes it might look that way, but I would say that every time we've really had to sell a player, there's been a reason behind that. It's not like we've sat here really wanting to sell Chuba Akpom after he's just scored 28 goals. You know, he didn't want to sign a new contract. He made that clear. He had a year left on his contract. We were forced really to do that. It was a similar situation with Jed Spence, for example, with him not really being wanted at the club by previous managers, etc. There's always been something. It's not like we sort of sit here going, we can't wait to sell these players. We absolutely don't want to just sell players. But however, at times, there comes a point where you have to do what's right for the club. And I appreciate sometimes that's not the most, something that you guys want to see. But in terms of ambition, still a fierce ambition to go up. When we attracted Michael to the job, you know, Michael, in his career and what he's done as a player, he's not come here to just sit in mid-table championship. I certainly haven't. I come from Norwich, where we've gone up twice in 3 years. You know, I want to do that here. But the only thing I would say, when I did first arrive here, the squad wasn't really in a position to go up. It was a squad full of players that were coming to the end maybe of their careers, or frankly weren't good enough to go up. So we've been in a rebuilding process. There's been a few little speed humps in the way, with players having to go, and which is, you know, has slowed us down a little bit. But the ambition from everybody here is absolutely to have a fight to go up. This year, you know, it's been very hard with the teams that came down. You know, there's three huge clubs come down with massive money. That's been hard to fight, don't get me wrong. But we still want to absolutely go up, and we'll continue to fight and do that. But there has been a case of just getting the squad back to the ages were running away. There were lads that had been here a long time and hadn't quite hit the level. There was a lot of stuff that needed to be done, and I feel like we're in a really healthy position. But the questions I'm, you know, quite rightly getting about replacing the Tubers and the Morgans, we just need that little extra bit now that helps us do that. And that's absolutely what we want to do, and we absolutely want to go up.
So you mentioned Michael Carrick's ambition there. So Michael Carrick's contract runs out in 2025. He's the most important figure, I would say, at the moment on the football side of it at the club. Has there been any sort of talks with Michael Carrick about extending his stay on Teesside?
Yeah, I mean, listen, there has been. I like to keep that, you know, it's private, it's between, you know, the club and Michael. But, you know, there's been talks, and they're still ongoing. But, you know, I'll leave it at that. We certainly haven't just sat here and left it be. There's conversations that are going on, and we'll see where we get to.
So, this is more of a statement than a question, Kieran, but I'd like your thoughts on it. This has come from Jonathan Willoughby. So, financial fair play and the impact of parachute payments on it. In addition to make the championship unbalanced, the promoted team's ability to spend is a lot higher once promoted if they were previously in receipt of a parachute payment. This is messing the game up, and there is no level playing field.
I'll have to be careful what I say, in case I don't want any phone calls tomorrow from people in higher positions. But I agree, totally agree. It's, you know, I don't know Leicester's wage bill. I think it's in and around £75 million in the championship. I'm sure Southampton and Leeds is not a million miles away from that. How, and I'm not saying it's impossible, but how you're expected to compete with that, it has made the whole championship really one-sided, to be honest. And there's no shock that, you know, the three clubs are starting to run away. Now, the bit that is in there is Ipswich, you know, and you've got to credit Ipswich for a really good job that they've done and the players that they've got. So it's not impossible, but it makes it really, really difficult with the amount of money that they have to spend. And what they do with their spending is they lift everything that you try and do that's normal in the Championship. Everything goes up 10 grand a week, and it makes it really difficult for the clubs that haven't got that money underneath.
So in regards to that, I'm a big fan of the NFL. In the NFL, you have a salary cap, which totally evens it, and then you've got to spend that money yourself. Would you be in favour of a salary cap, or will that never happen in the world of football?
You know what, it's a really difficult one to answer, and I think we've only got 45 minutes going all night on this. I'll tell you the reason why is because, listen, the Premier League's one of the best leagues in the world, if not the best. A lot of people argue the best. The Championship, funny enough, when I talk to people outside of England, think it's like the fifth best league in the world. And that's come because we have got people like, you know, Wilfred Ndidi in our league at the minute, Jamie Vardy, and, you know, whoever else you want to mention at these clubs. And if you take that away, it is going to weaken the brand. But at the same time, I'm sitting here moaning, saying it's hard to keep up with the likes of, you know, teams that have got James and Somerville. You know, it's like I say, I've not really got the answer. I wish I did. I don't think it's even at the minute. I think it's difficult. But at the same time, careful what you wish for. You know, you could salary cap it and get it brought right down, and then we end up watching loads of League One players playing in the Championship. No disrespect to League One players. And then it really filters it down, and then we're all... we're bored and lacking quality. So I don't know what the answer is.
If the three teams that have gone up last season come back down again, in Burnley and Sheffield United and Luton, would that maybe give Middlesbrough a better chance of things next season? I know they'll get the parachute payment, but just the difference in size of clubs to your Leeds, your Southamptons, your Leicesters, who've been in the Premier League for a period of time, would that be favourable?
Yeah, I mean, it would, without, you know, trying to sound, you know, negative or stating the obvious, absolutely. I think if them teams are not as big as the teams, you know, I mean, I was talking to a guy who works at Crystal Palace, and he said to me he thinks Leicester would finish in the top 10 in the current team they've got now in the Premier League. I don't think I disagree. You know, we're playing against them week in, week out. I know, you know, we beat them, funny enough, at the Riverside, but, yeah. You know, their points total tells you the consistency that they can put down at this level, and they're just going to keep running away. Unfortunately, I haven't got the answer, but it is. I would think it will be more competitive next season if those three clubs do come down.
Yeah.
I know that Dicko asked earlier on about Michael Carrick's contract. We've got a couple of players whose contracts are out in the summer, the likes of your Johnny Howson's, your Paddy McNair's. Are there any plans in there to be talking to these players about extending, or what conversations have we been having there?
Now, to be fair, me, Michael, the guys, Neil, everyone, we meet quite regularly and discuss the players on individual basis, just to make sure we're all on the same page, and all the boys that are out of contract get the same, you know, level of discussion. We talk and we think, is there a place for them next season, and what we're going to do and what we're going to try and build. We discuss it. It's probably a little bit too early at the moment, if I'm honest. You know, we want to, you know, let a bit more time go past and then see where we are. And obviously we have to coincide that with target players that we've got scouting wise and where we can go there as well. So it's always an ongoing discussion, but, you know, no decisions have been made at the minute.
Absolutely. And say, one of the players mentioned there, Johnny Howson, obviously he's not getting any younger. You know, he's getting towards that age where, you know, he may think about, you know, slowing down and getting towards retirement.
Doesn't show any signs of it, though.
That's my point. The signs he shows on the pitch, he's still as young as ever. He's still fantastic. He's such an influential player for us, being our captain. Just things like that make it a bit more difficult. Obviously, I know the model of the club, to, you know, you said about when you came in, your players being here that were getting towards that sort of stage that I've just described there. You know, yeah. But Johnny Howson's, for me, is an absolute massive exception. You know, he's like Ben. We refer to him on here as Benjamin Button because he just looks younger every time you see him. Is it things like that that make it a bit more difficult when you're looking at, I suppose, contract negotiations for players in that sort of age gap?
I'm with you a little bit. I think he is Benjamin Button. He's testament to his professionalism and how well he treats himself, and you know, he's first in, last out, trains great. Yeah, I remember Michael telling me a story, I think it was the back end of last season, he'd played God knows how many games in a row, they were training. Michael asked him if he'd just sit the game out that they were playing in training for 5 minutes, and he was furious. That sums him up, you know, he wants to, you know, train like he plays, and that's him, that competitive mentality is still in him. And whilst that's there, he's a hard player to ignore, that can bring something to the club. I think we can all see what Johnny brings to the club, without giving too much away. You know, Johnny's been brilliant since I've been here. I can't fault him at all. So it doesn't make it more difficult. It's just a great problem to have in a way, that you've got a player there doing what he's doing. It's not a bad thing. We see that as a positive.
Oh, of course not. I said that's, you know, it absolutely is a positive. It's just more obviously towards, you know, when you look at the stats, you know, age wise and things, obviously it's, you think, oh, you should be slowing down now and kind of thing. But he's just been fantastic, hasn't he? He's been a brilliant servant to this football club for me.
So, mainly on Twitter and what have you, the club were linked with going back in for Tuber Akpom, which I never thought would happen. And before we signed Luke Thomas, did the club consider going back in for Ryan Giles once he was made available for loan from Luton?
He said there's been a few discussions about Ryan in these halls, I can assure you. It's just been a really difficult one with Ryan. His money and what he got at Luton was obviously better than what, you know, any championship club was willing to offer. So that took him away from us. Ryan's had a good relationship with Rob Edwards, who was his under-21 coach at the time. So there was a pull there for him to go Premier League, money, Rob, etc. So that was the first conversation that was had about Ryan, and he moved away. And then we've obviously then tried to get on with it and try to build our squad and get ourselves going. And with Ryan, the level of deal that was out there, I don't know where Hull are getting their money from, but fair play, they've found some money somewhere, and they've really gone aggressive and strong there. It is a loan, but it's a loan with an obligation, and the obligation's only based on them staying in the championship. So basically it's a purchase that they'll pay for in the summer as opposed to paying now, which is nothing wrong with that. That's fine, that's how it can work, so there's no problem with it. But that's how that's worked. It's a permanent transfer to Hull.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing I've been asked a couple of times, the free agent market. Is it something that you look at frequently? You know, I know obviously you've got your own set model in your head for the club, and you know how you want to dictate things and look at things and move things forward. Do you look regularly at the free agent market? Obviously, I know a couple of players have become free agents recently. Do you really look at them and think, are they worth a punt, or is it just something you completely bypass?
Absolutely. I'll be honest, before I come on this call, I was my guy Chris Jones, obviously, who's our head of recruitment. I was on a call with Chris. We were just discussing free agents before I come on here. So, absolutely, why wouldn't you?
Which ones are those then, Kieran?
I might have to keep them away for now. But no, listen, we absolutely look at that market. It is a good market. I mean, listen, we'll see where we get to on that. But there's always, you know, we always like to have a plan for every eventuality, and you know, we'll sit with Michael when the guys are back in tomorrow and say we've identified XXX, and we just have that ongoing discussion like we always do.
Perfect.
Is it a case? What was the thoughts on Callum Kavanagh? So I was just going to say, what was the thoughts on Callum Kavanagh? Because it was a bit of a surprise to the supporters that he was actually left on a permanent. We thought he'd be, you know, a loan deal, get some more game time in him, because we thought he was quite highly rated at the club with his goals and under-23s and under-21. Why was he allowed to leave? Do we have some gems coming through the system that we're confident are going to go on and do better things? Or was Cav maybe not just at the required level we thought to be a championship player?
Callum's been here for a long time, and he's a player that the staff here know really, really well, and I've obviously got to know over the last 2.5 years. You know, he's a brilliant kid. He's motivated. His desire is to play football and to play men's football. I think he's fed up and finished playing youth football now. It's time he goes and flourishes in a men's first team environment. We couldn't offer him that, to be honest. We didn't feel he was quite at the level yet to play in the championship for us. Where he had opportunities to go and play at a club that did feel he was ready to go, you know, and play, and I'm sure he'll go there and do really, really well. it was just a case of not really being able to hold him back any longer. You know, he was ready to go. He didn't want to wait any longer. You know, as a staff, we didn't see him ready yet. And there was no real room to hang on any longer. It was, you know, we protected ourselves in terms of the deal, like we always do, and we've let him go on and start his career, really. So that's the reason behind that.
Yeah.
How much of an impact do loan signing wages have on financial fair play? Some fans seem to think getting loans in is a low-cost option, but it might not always be the case, that.
No, I mean, the loan, you tend to pay salaries, agency fees, and sometimes a loan fee within that as well, if the club want to, you know, charges for borrowing one of their players, you know, because that's nice and helpful of them to do that as well. So it can get quite expensive. And the problem you've got a little bit, if you're borrowing someone, and we know about this more than any at the minute, Middlesbrough fans and us here, we know about this more than anyone with what we did with Archer and Ramsey and Giles. You know, you can ultimately pay to develop other people's players and then watch them go on and get Premier League moves, etc., and you receive absolutely nothing except a big hole that's left that you've got to fill. And not just that, it's like, you know, the holes that it leaves in the fans' hearts as well would have done really well, so you've got that issue as well. And in some of them cases, like Cameron Archer, I mean, you know, we genuinely had no chance of getting anywhere near that level of deal that was done at Sheffield United, no chance, and the boy wanted to play in the Premier League. So all we really did was pay money, facilitate development of another player and send him to Sheffield United. So it's not that you can't do it, sometimes you have to do it. I'm not saying, you know, you absolutely don't do it, but doing it en masse, you know, I think everyone's seen that we've just come away from that.
So after the success of the loan players last season and us, in your words, facilitating a move for them to other clubs and helping the selling clubs, is that something the club might be more reluctant to do in the future?
I think it's case by case, really. I think, you know, we look at it as a whole, and then whenever we talk about something, we just put it into, you know, a big group of people here within the football side of it, and we all just discuss it for what it is and the ups and downs of it. I wouldn't say we wouldn't do it. You know, we've had to go back into the loan market here to cover Alex Bangura, who's injured at the moment. We've had to bring in Luke, so it's not like we haven't done it. Obviously, Luke Ayling's come in to help us on the right hand side as well with Tommy's absence. So we will do it still. It's not against, you know, what we would do, but I just think on mass borrowing loads of Premier League players and then sending them back ready for the Premier League and we get nothing out of it has become something that we're very wary of. I know in Holland, if you borrow a player from Holland, they actually want a site, they want a sell on as part of it. So if you loan a player to them, they'll say we want 10% of that player's rights going forward because we've helped develop him for the last year. What do we get from it? And it's quite a smart way of doing it. I'm not saying clubs are going to accept that, but they try in Holland. And you know what? When I look at it now and I think, you know what? I wish we could have done that with Cameron and Aaron, Ryan, etc. So, like I say, I don't want to kill loans off, and it's not a statement that we won't do them, but we've just got to be a bit smarter with it.
Just with the
loans. Is
that
something you might try in the future, then, Kieran? So I was going to say, is that something you might try in the future with loans? You might actually try that. What they're doing in Holland, is that something you might actually try with Middlesbrough?
Hey, we've already tried, but we get a quick answer. Don't worry about it.
So with it, Kieran, obviously you touched on there, obviously the success that Archer, Ramsey had here last season. And we look at, you know, we've got Michael Carrick, who's got connections, you know, with Manchester United, you know, your connections with previous clubs. Was that not part of, if we do go for a loan player, is that not part of the pitch from the club that, look, we had Cameron Archer here and Ramsey for 5-6 months, and the prices that they have gone for further down the line, playing under this manager, playing this type of football, how about if you send us your player, you know, you want this loan fee up front, etc., but look what you could get in the future if you allow that and allow them to come and play for us.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's more of a pitch we've tried to use on bringing permanent players here, like Finn Azaz and Morgan Rogers. You know, Morgan was one that we said that too. You know, Morgan could have sat on his salary at Man City, which was a bigger salary than he got here. He could have sat on that, gone on loan somewhere and maybe done all right, maybe not. We sold that pitch to him and look what we can do. Funny enough, we did it in 6 months, which was a bit quicker than we anticipated and wasn't quite in the plan. We wanted him to be here longer, but you know, Finners has as well, you know. So we do sell that. We're trying to sell that to permanent fixtures as opposed to loans. Not saying we wouldn't, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that we wouldn't try that in the future, for sure.
No, no, absolutely right. I mean, one question I do want to ask, youth team development, obviously, it's a question come through via our Facebook page. They say, how are youth teams actually playing right now? If you don't know, they're 3-0 up, so they're doing really well. Obviously, a few players have had to come onto the bench due to the catastrophic injuries that we've had. The amount of injuries has been silly at times this season, as you'll have seen as well. You know, have we got any sort of gems coming through? Obviously, Hayden Hackney's been a massive success since he's came through. We all love Hayden. He's been fantastic. Obviously, a few players have come onto the bench. Is there a few players that you're looking at? I know you said about Kavanagh wasn't quite ready. Are you looking at them thinking, well, they're not too far away from making that step up?
To be honest, we've got a few in there that we've got high hopes for. I'm not going to name them, actually, because I think it's unfair on the tiny young kids, and I don't really want to put that sort of pressure on their head already. They'll have enough coming.
Yeah.
But no, there is a few in there that we are excited around. It's a plan of mine to start adding a few more in them groups as things start to evolve, with the first team group being a bit younger and more settled. You know, we want to start targeting players to come and help them, not hinder them getting away, but to help and just give us a bit more in that production line underneath. But now there's some good. This Middlesbrough's been has always produced youth players and young players, and I can still see, you know, they're still coming through. But like I say, I just don't want to name the kids. I don't think it's fair on them.
So with the money Chelsea have been thrown about after Hackney's goal in the first leg, I'm surprised they didn't put £100 million bid in. But on a serious note, he's a young England under 21 international who's come on leaps and bounds and is relatively new in experience in the pro game. He must be worth a canny bit now, Kieran, mustn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he absolutely he would be. I mean, he's one absolute. We're not. You talk about ambition and wanting to, you know, fight our way to the Premier League. We can't be losing players like Hayden, and he is one, you know, we want to keep. He's a red card boy. He's a local boy. He loves the club. He wants to stay. You know, we need to make sure, as good as he does, he wants to stay here and be a part of what we're doing. But listen, also, I can't be naive. If he continues to develop at the rate and he outgrows us, it's inevitable that clubs are going to come. I think we could have the same with Rav Van den Berg. I mean, you know, they're two players that you know, we need to catch them up a little bit at times, and that's what we want to do, because we don't want to see them disappear.
Although we're not going to sell Hayden at the moment, has any top club made any tentative inquiries or chatted to you about Hayden, or is that something you can't really talk about?
No, listen, I'll be honest, these boys know nowadays what's going on. They've all got good agents that are in the know and know what's going on in the world of football, so they already know. You know, a young player like a Hayden or a Rav and others that we've got, they naturally do prick the eye of the big boys, and you know they have got 100 scouts out there on a daily basis, and people have to be busy. So yeah, you get phone calls on them, people ask a lot of questions about, you know, our players. They get beaten back, really, with quite an aggressive go away, but at the same time they want to know, you know, what they're like as boys, etc. But yeah, I mean, we'd all be naive if we think Hayden Hackney's not got the eye of a few bigger clubs in the Premier League. Of course he has. I know Hayden's in no rush. He's a local boy that wants to play for Middlesbrough. He's in no rush to go anywhere, but you just never know. After the Morgan Rogers one, it just teaches you never quite know what's around the corner.
Absolutely not.
So one quick,
is there any more Australians on the horizon? Just Rai, who's a guest on the show, the Australian Rai.
You'll have seen his videos, Kieran. I'm absolutely
seen his videos, Kieran. Yeah, he's absolutely buzzing that we've got three Aussies on board. Is that another market that we're looking at now? Because if you're a top Australian player looking to come to Europe, and you look at Middlesbrough, we've got three players that are developing nicely. Would that make us more attractive?
Definitely, I get a lot of calls from Australian, well, not just Australian agents, but agents of Australian players. I get a lot of calls. They see what we do. They see what we've done with Riley, and see Tom in goal, and Sammy's working his way into it as well. So we do. It's a market that certainly appeals. You know, it's a market I've quite liked in my career. I've been involved with Australians from day dot, really, when I signed Aidan O'Neill, funny enough. He was in the Aussie team at Burnley when he was 16 years old. So go back quite a way. There's no link. I'm not Australian or never been. I've just Australians seem to find me, maybe. I don't know. But, you know, they're, what I do like with Aussies is they just got a great mentality. They work hard and they run. And they're just, you know, they are good to have around the place.
So you mentioned Rav Vandenberg there, and I've been massively impressed with him. I think he's got a huge career ahead of him. Apparently there was a lot of interest in him from big clubs. How do we attract players to this club? I know, as a fan of the club, how big we are. How do you attract someone like Rav Vandenberg to this football club?
Oh, Rav, do you know what? Rav's a long story, and a good story, but he got, because of his brother, you see, his brother was on the radar of everyone a long time ago. And when, I mean, I watched Sepp at Norwich when he was at Swallow, and he broke through at 16 or whatever, I was 17. And I remember I met the agent at the time, and it was a, quite, you should see his younger brother. But his younger brother at the time, I don't know, Rav would have been 13, 14, whatever. It would have been, it was totally irrelevant at the time, but it always registered with me that there was a younger brother. And then as time ticked by, Sepp come, goes to Liverpool, and then Rav broke through. I kept my eye on him. I think first time would have been at Norwich, and then I've come to Middlesbrough. He's still in the back of my mind. And then Chris, who works for me, had watched him and liked him. And funny enough, his agent is a really interesting fella for an agent, to be honest, because he could have took him to, I don't know, 10 other clubs, 15 other clubs for a lot more money for both Rav and himself. And he just liked Middlesbrough. He liked the look of it. He liked the feel of it. And then we set a call up between Rav, the agent, and Michael and Jonathan. And Michael and Jonathan just blew Rav away. Come off the call, the agent rang me straight away and said, you guys have won him over here. You've got a little window where you can get him before I'm going to get, you know, blanketed with calls from so-called bigger clubs. Well, no, they are. We're talking about Borussia Dortmund and AC Milan. We are talking very big clubs that are going to come for him. You've done your convincing on him. You've just got to get the deal done. And we flipped that deal. I think we did a really complicated deal in about 24 hours, which included Rav making his way to the airport before we'd agreed anything. Over he come. This is how good the agents were. This is not something that happens on a regular basis, this. With just a bit of trust in everybody. And the agents landed with Rav. And the guys were on pre-season at the time. At this point, the guys had flown out for pre-season. So I sat in here with Rav's dad and the two agents, and we got it done in no time. And then what I remember the agent telling me, he said to me, do you know that Rav rang every single club himself to say, I've made a decision to go to Middlesbrough, this is where I want to go, thank you for your interest. Now, he sat there and rang, as far as I'm aware, 15 other clubs, big people as well, big directors of football, big chief execs at big, you know, I say Dortmund, Juventus, Milan's, Ajax, I believe. He rang every single person himself to tell him why he chose Middlesbrough and thank you for your interest. And that's the mark of the boy, really. He's 19 going on 29, and that's how that come about. And do you know what, within about 15 minutes of the first training session in Portugal, I thought, you know what, we've done all right here. He's going to do great, but he's probably done a little bit better than even I thought.
No, I mean, I've got one more question for you, but just before that, please tell us one of them clubs he rang was Newcastle.
I don't actually know. I got, if I knew that, I'd say
it can't have been. Kieran said big clubs winning for him,
because you would have made a lot of friends in Teesside if you said one of them was Newcastle. But
I don't know, to be fair. I know a lot of the foreign ones. To be fair to the agent, I think he kept a lot of the English clubs out of the conversation, because I think he didn't want to be like one of those. He just, you know, told me about a lot of the clubs abroad, but I don't know.
No, I've got one last question for you, and then I'll let you go, and so we can wrap things up. It's a bit of a funny one for yourself. Obviously, the amount of reports that come out from journalists and fake accounts on social media, etc. What do you personally think when you see these reports where linked to X, Y, and Z? Do you just look and think, "Oh, behave yourself," and just have a bit of a giggle to yourself? You know, is that your morning cup of tea kind of reason? You just have a laugh and then move on with your day?
Do you know what? Sometimes it's a bit frustrating, because you look at it and you think, you know, come on, why would we be linked with him? Sometimes it's, you know, the other way. Okay, yeah, that's fair enough. So, you know, sometimes they're not too far away, these links. It's funny, I think Middlesbrough suffer a little bit with lazy agents that, because Middlesbrough is such a big club in the league, I think lazy agents just use Middlesbrough to bump up interest from other clubs. All, you know, Johnny Bloggs is linked with Middlesbrough, and so I think we get linked with some players, and it's just lazy work from agents to try and get some interest up, to be honest.
Absolutely.
Please tell me you can rule out Dwight Gayle as a free agent.
Oh, please.
I never like to rule anyone out. I think that one's going to be difficult, I can't be honest.
No, that's absolutely fine. Well, Kieran, I really appreciate your time. You've been absolutely brilliant. You've answered all our questions. You've been really insightful. Been a pleasure having you on. Thank you so much. We'll let you go and enjoy the rest of your evening. And I'm sure we'll catch up again really soon. Thank you so much.
Thanks very much, Kieran.
No, no problem. Thanks, sorry about the video. I don't know why it didn't
work. Oh, don't worry about that.
Everybody done you a favour.
Everybody have made a lot of friends in Teesside, if you said one of them was Newcastle. But
I don't know, to be fair. I know a lot of the foreign ones. To be fair to the agent, I think he kept a lot of the English clubs out of the conversation because I think he didn't want to be like one of those. He just, you know, told me about a lot of the clubs abroad. But I don't know.
No, I've got one last question for you and then I'll let you go and so we can wrap things up. It's a bit of a funny one for yourself. Obviously, the amount of reports that come out from journalists and fake accounts on social media, etc. What do you personally think when you see these reports where linked to X, Y, and Z? Do you just look and think, "Oh, behave yourself," and just have a bit of a giggle to yourself? You know, is that your morning cup of tea kind of reason? You just have a laugh and then move on with your day.
You know what? Sometimes it's a bit frustrating because you look at it and you think, you know, come on, why would we be linked with him? Sometimes it's, you know, the other way. Okay, yeah, that's fair enough. So, you know, sometimes they're not too far away, these links. It's funny, I think Middlesbrough suffer a little bit with lazy agents that, because Middlesbrough is such a big club in the league, I think lazy agents just use Middlesbrough to bump up interest from other clubs. All, you know, Johnny Bloggs is linked with Middlesbrough, and so I think we get linked with some players, and it's just lazy work from agents to try and get some interest up, to be honest.
Absolutely.
Please tell me you can rule out Dwight Gayle as a free agent.
Oh, please.
I never like to rule anyone out. I think that one's going to be difficult, I can't be honest.
No, that's absolutely fine. Well, Kieran, I really appreciate your time. You've been absolutely brilliant. You've answered all our questions. You've been really insightful. Been a pleasure having you on. Thank you so much. We'll let you go and enjoy the rest of your evening, and I'm sure we'll catch up again really soon. Thank you so much.
Thanks very much, Kieran.
No problem. Thanks, sorry about the video. I don't know why it didn't work.
Oh, don't worry about that.
Everybody done you a favour.
Everybody knows what you look like. It's absolutely fine. Don't
all worry. The Facebook viewers, they wanted to see what jammers you had on, Kieran.
No, we'll let you go.
Vandenberg.
You do know that'll be getting clipped and going everywhere now you said that now. But no, brilliant. I'll let you go. I'll let you log yourself off. Thank you so much, Kieran. Appreciate your time.
Cheers, guys.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye. There you go. That was Kieran Scott. How good was that?
Oh, listen, we've sat down with him before and he was absolutely fantastic. And there's certain things that we discussed when we were in the boardroom with him that we can't really discuss, but it was a bit funny you mentioning Dwight Gayle.
Oh, that was a big grin, wasn't it?
There's David McGoldrick as well, a story you could say about, but we were never getting up.
Oh, as soon as he said like Dwight Gayle, I was like, no.
There's been loads of comments coming through on Facebook about how good Kieran is. Everyone loved that story about Vandenberg, and that shows what a for a 19-year-old to be personally phoning them clubs at that size.
Yeah.
Fantastic. We've got a gem there, I tell you.
No, that was absolutely
I think
absolutely
the club
amazing.
Shop needed to get onto them, Rob Vandenberg.
Hey, we want an incentive for that,
top seller.
If Joe, anyone in the MFC's listening, yeah, we want an incentive for that. You know, we got Kieran to say that, so
like
you know,
a Dutch loan.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, that's us done for this week.
That was fantastic.
You know, we really hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. It was fantastic having him on. It was brilliant. Keep an eye on our socials. Yes, Mohamedy is ruling out Dwight Gayle. I will absolutely categorically say that for him.
Yes, Mohamed, it's safe to say.
Oh, and
do, yeah.
Dicko, you've got an admirer. Helen says, a big kiss to the Geordie one. There you go.
All right. It's probably the Helen that I know. I don't think it'll be a new admirer.
Oh, there you go then. No problem. You wave away then. So there you go. Well, keep an eye on the socials. We'll put all our predictions out for Bristol City. We might even get a little preview out at some point. You know, we'll see what we can do for you. But that was more important for us. Thank you so much for. Yes, Jeff. They'll be for the women. Keep everything out. That is absolutely brilliant. That is what a way to finish. That is. So yes, keep an eye on the socials. Get your predictions in for Saturday as well. You know, we still got that print to get out there. So please, please keep in touch. And thank you so much for listening and getting involved. Without your questions and without your insights, that would never have happened tonight. So, yeah, lads, thank you very much for putting me in.
No, pleasure.
Loved it. Yeah, brilliant. Dicko, thank you very much for putting me on. Great having you on as always.
And
yeah, we'll have a chat again next week. No one exciting next week. We may have John Don back. So, you know, there's something to look forward to. But yes, we'll leave it there. Thank you so much. Take care.
Up the Borough.
Thank you for listening to the 12th Man Podcast. Hope to see you all again next week. Up the Borough.